Welcome to Bee's Table Talk, the podcast in which we have had great conversations about business and our economy. My name is Bee Kyle, the president and CEO of the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce. And in the weeks to come, we have several conversations scheduled with business leaders across various sectors. As of this recording, as a nation and world, we are coping with the COVID-19 pandemic and the ensuing seizure of the economy. Our market is doubly impacted by the tragic killing of George Floyd while in custody of the Minneapolis Police Department. The conversations ahead are sure to be especially thought-provoking. My guests today are new friends, SPAC members, and leaders within the Delwood Gardens Assisted Living and Memory Care community, Tim Funkmeyer and Courtney Bloomquist. Tim is one of the owners and operators at Delwood Gardens and has nearly 30 years of experience in human service organization leadership. Courtney has been in the senior care field for 15 years, holding various roles from activities coordinator to on-site management. She is now the housing director at Delwood Gardens, overseeing all community operations. Tim and Courtney, thanks for sitting down with me today.
You are welcome. We're glad to be here.
Thanks, Bee.
So before we get started, I'd like to learn more about your organization, where you're located, the visions under which you operate, and how you generally approach your work.
Good. We're happy to do that. Hi, this is Tim Funkmeyer, and I, Delwood Gardens is an operation that's been in place on the east side, on East 7th, 753 East 7th, for 6.5 years. We serve primarily the older adult population in the area of assisted living and memory care. We're 101 units, and we uniquely serve a population that is able to access the resources of elderly waiver and a caddy reimbursement, which are basically terms that are used for medical assistance or Medicaid for those in assisted living settings. We have a team here of about 45 people. We're a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week business providing home health services and other support to daily living. Courtney, would you add anything to that?
I think you got it all, Tim.
All right.
Well, I will just add a personal note. My mom is in memory care, and she uses an elderly waiver.
Yeah, elderly waiver. Yep.
Elderly waiver. So this is nomenclature that's new. And for those of us whose parents are approaching at the age where they require more care, the elderly care waiver for those of us who I need assistance with paying has been fabulous. So I just wanted to thank you personally for the work you're doing in service to elders who do need more assistance financially, that you still provide thoughtful, caring support and services for these folks.
Thanks. That means a lot to us. And actually, I also turned some of the gratitude out to the state of Minnesota and some of the work that they did early on to recognize the need for a payment source for people that really didn't need nursing home care, but that was really their only option. This is going back now 10 or 15 years. And it's got wind all over it because it was a lesser cost alternative for the payer, which is the state, and then managed by the county programs, and then placing people really where it better met their needs, a more home-like setting, a more residential setting, versus the more, and not intending any offense by saying this, but nursing homes tends to have a little bit more institutional layout and functionality, frankly. So we're grateful for that.
Yeah. So understanding how you run your organization, what were your first action steps when you knew COVID-19 had made its way to the United States, specifically for congregate care settings?
Yeah. So I'm going to start, and Courtney may add a beat to this. So the team being as high functioning it is, and at that time we had about 87 or 88 people in the building, and you could see what was happening in January and February, and there was a growing concern about the spread and how the spread occurred, and we, quite honestly, were about anywhere from 3 days to a week ahead of what became then either state guidance from the Department of Health or the CDC, and so we were, before mandated, moving to a room service model for meals, which is a nice way of saying the awful thing that we had to do, which is remove people from the dining room. But it was an important thing to do. And in the long run, as we're looking back on some of the more severe cases, one of the great incubators of COVID are settings like dining rooms, especially in congregate care settings. We started saying no to visitors, hated doing that, but we did it. Activities, we had to really scale back. We did, basically, they became one-to-one interactions, which is okay, but clearly not ideal for this type of setting. We did that as well as agreeing that removing what we consider non-essential staff, important staff, but non-essential staff from the site. And we did that a little bit in advance of when it was really called out, right? What kind of things additionally would you add to that, Courtney?
So every day kind of at the beginning changed as far as you know, guidance and direction from the Minnesota Department of Health and our long-term care associations in Minnesota. So at first, every day was a change. Every day was a new thing. Every day was different as far as what PPE was required of our staff, our residents. So we kind of just, we had to stay on top of what they were saying nearly every day. We have several meetings with MDH and our associations every week to make sure that we are still following the guidance that's given.
How have you experienced the support from the Minnesota Department of Health? Because, of course, I'm tracking stuff nationally, right? What are other states doing? What are other communities doing? How are other states getting resources to the business community? How are you seeing MDH supporting you?
Yeah, so I would say it's mixed. You know, we're all in this together, like everyone's been saying, and this is all new for everyone. We tend to look to them for guidance on how we take care of our seniors. Unfortunately, they don't have all the answers right away. So it's trying to be, you know, open-minded and working with whatever they think is the best thing at that moment in time.
Gotta be tough.
Yeah, go ahead, B, sorry.
Please.
We like our relationship with the Department of Health. We are not afraid of any guidance that they would provide us. We welcome it. We also believe that it doesn't end with NDH guidance. And that's kind of the point we made earlier about moving non-essential staff out before it became mandated or like highly recommended. And so it is a partnership. I like what you said, Courtney. And it is, and we see it that way. We don't see them as adversarial. We need their help. They are trying to do the best for our community. We believe that.
I'm seeing how so many other states are really struggling with managing the growth of cases. And then I think about congregate care specifically. My mom has struggled with anxiety as a result of so much isolation, right? And she doesn't have enough contact with her family. How are you dealing with, how are you experiencing and dealing with morale with residents, family, and staff as well? How do you manage that?
I think it's all about communication. You really have to be able to have really meaningful conversations with residents, with families, as far as what is going on. I mean, we can't fix it. We can't change it. But what we can do is communicate what we're trying to do.
The other part. Go ahead, B. Sorry.
Tell me about the other part.
Well, just I'm thinking about the point you made about your mom, and you know, it's been troubling from day one. And I had, you know, friends of mine that are not in this profession, and were challenging the idea of no congregate meals, and what do you mean no visitors? And I mean, my response was always, I hate this. I don't want to be doing this, but we have to do it. And the good news right now, and it's a like a small g, small n, but we'll grab whatever we can, is that we're now starting to figure out how to do outdoor visits. Mm-hmm. We're now starting to talk about indoor visits. On the Care Providers of Minnesota board call today, a board on which I serve, there's real active dialogue about that between the associations and the state and trying to figure out, you know, how do we do that? And I mean, Courtney ran out and bought a patio table and chairs so we can have outdoor visits out front next week. So, you know, because that isolation piece, it's real. And we don't want to pretend like it's not.
Yeah. And right. You know, specifically, we're trying to meet those needs as far as, you know, leisure activities on a one-to-one basis, which it's very difficult with, you know, the amount of residents that we serve and the amount of staff that we have, but we're trying our best as far as getting people outdoors when it's nice out, trying to just have more one-on-one conversations.
Are you still advising that your guests, your clients stay put? And I'm asking for myself, my mom wants to go out and do some shopping, for example, or go for a drive. Are you still encouraging your residents and your guests to stay home and not do that kind of outside adventuring?
Yes, and unfortunately, we sound like a broken record because that is still what the health department is putting out as far as guidance.
All right, good. That's good to know. Yeah. Okay, that's good to know.
Yep, it's actually the term they're using is shelter in place. I mean, that has been in place for now 3 months. Yeah.
Oh yeah, our poor parents having to sit still and be so isolated.
Yep. Yeah, no, you're...
Well, what does the future look like? You know, so how long will you need to operate with this approach, do you think? And how does the rest of the year look as far as you can see?
I'll start, Bea. You know, because I'm trying to keep track of what's going on. And if you want, you know, everyone's got their opinions on the credible sources and not, and some of those opinions become political. I'll stay out of all that. But if you start looking at what is being said by, you know, credible scientists, they're claiming that this is a ride we're going to be on for 1 to 2 years, and then probably only saying that because then they could change it to 1 to 2 years in a year. Frankly, we really don't know. And you know, there's some optimism, and everyone wants a vaccine. And you know, Dr. Fauci a couple days ago said maybe early 21. You know, our struggle, quite frankly, is that we think people are done with COVID, but COVID is not done with our communities. And so we're going to be at this for a while. We have to stay vigilant to that. It's, you know, all I got at the end of the day when Courtney and Lindsay and Sigrid and some of our other leadership are struggling with, now what do I do? Somebody wants to leave again, is all I got is say it one more time. I mean, we really don't have anything else. And it's the hard part about it. And so, Courtney, give some insight to the day-to-day that I don't have beyond what I just said.
Well, I get that question daily. When is this going to end? Mm-hmm. When are we going to go back to normal? And I so badly wish I had a more optimistic answer, but obviously I don't know that. And my prediction is it's going to stay the same for a very long time because of our population, because of who we serve. And their vulnerabilities to this. But we just, you know, try to stay optimistic and continue to show hope for those residents.
Yeah, and hope to God we can do the outdoor visits, which is one little, it's those little wins that we glom onto and get excited.
I love
about
that idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, well, how has this impacted admissions and those needing care? Is that changing as well?
Yeah, so right away we had to suspend tours because that's bringing visitors into our building. So then that suspended our admissions. So we were still getting a lot of calls for people that wanted to move into an assisted living, and we had to just come up with different and new ways to kind of move that process along and think of new processes to allow new residents to come into our building. So we started doing virtual tours. We started having a lot more conversations virtually, and now had to come up with different ways on moving someone in. You know, I think everyone has to remember that they're moving into an apartment. So when you move into an apartment, how does that look? You have movers that come help you. You have families that come help you. But we needed to limit all those people out of the building. So we had to come up with a list of the most essential items needed in your apartment, you know, short term, hopefully. And then what our staff internally could do to help to move you in and get you settled.
Oh, boy. Oh, my. So your staff was even doing these extra helping people move in. Bodies of work. I hadn't even thought about that. Wow.
Right. Right.
So, So what about the, this is a new question that came up in light of some information we've gotten from one of our recent NDH reports that some the care folks are getting has changed as a result of COVID-19, that folks are less inclined to be getting non-COVID related care. How are your residents experiencing medical care right now? Are they able to get out and get what they need? Do the physicians come to you? How does that look?
Yeah, so, you know, right away it was like no visits, no doctor's appointments unless it was really, really necessary. And, you know, clinics weren't even taking, you know, folks right. for some visits. But what right. we did is we have a great relationship with health partners and have, we did a ton of telehealth visits. So our nursing staff would take the iPads and do telehealth visits with all of our residents that needed to be seen by the nurse practitioner or physician.
Great, okay. Okay, so what is it that you are in need of for staff or for residents? How can folks support you?
Yeah, Courtney and I had a good conversation about this. And, you know, we've got, we're speaking a little bit, I'd like to answer it both ways, like our little world and then the bigger world of our colleagues in our profession. And there's overlap. I mean, we're in reasonably good shape, B. We have the good fortune for luck and an amazing staff that we've only had one COVID positive case. And it was really light in the version, that's a non-medical term, the light part, but truly it was. No ICU, no vent, and back in a week. And he's, as our team says, better than ever. So we feel very fortunate in that case. So we have not been financially wiped out. We have not been, you know, we're not worried about making payroll. We've actually been fortunate to have some funding sources come our way through the state and through the CARES Act that is helping. Basically, it's rainy day money. I mean, it's money that we hope to not have to spend, but if we do, it's there. And by the way, the personal protective equipment has not gone without a price tag, and the overtime shifts and pickup shifts. We didn't have any issues from a broad standpoint about staff. When our one and only COVID resident returned, there was a little bit of unrest among staff for a day or two, but that subsided. Back to your question about the community, or just kind of what we need. We just need, and we've mostly got it. We've got the understanding of the community that it's hard right now, and we can't give you every answer you want. There's a lot of questions we're going to answer in ways you don't want us to answer. Like, can I come visit? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. No.
Right.
So it's really a lot about that right now. It's just a, you know, community understanding of all the changes we're under. And there's been, I feel, a lot of grace through it all, frankly. And that's really great in light of how it could be otherwise. What would you add, Courtney?
No, I think you've got it. I think, you know, a lot of our residents have really appreciated everything that we're doing, even though it's making their days very tough and very long, as well as the families. So yeah, I think Tim said it well.
Thanks.
Thank you. Well, that leads actually to a thought that has to do with, you know, how have you seen humanity rise up in a positive way through this? You're leading into some really big things. What would you say to that?
So I'll start, but Courtney's got a couple of great stories to tell about just what's happened here on site. But, you know, generally speaking, B, if you came to our building right now, every single staff person is wearing a surgical mask and either goggles or a face shield. Lindsay, whom you know, is with us right now, and that's how she's sitting. Now we don't have it on. We're in a room that's with the door shut, so Courtney and I can do this podcast with you. But every day, so the humanity for me in that moment is that we haven't had people say, "I can't do this. This is like you're kidding all day long. I got to wear this every day." So there's an element of humanity in that for me. I mean, and I'm the guy that gets to come twice a week for 2 hours and fog up my little goggles, you know? That's it. So other staff are doing another 38 over my two. So, yeah. What'd you
And you're,
we've just received a ton of love from strangers, from families. There's been a lot of support. We've received cards, pictures, letters for our residents. One day we had a big sign with hearts on it, showing appreciation for our staff. So it really just shows the support that everyone is willing to give through this tough time.
Yeah.
Well, so much appreciated. Well, I mean, you're caring for our parents. We need to care for you as well, because as well nurtured and supported as you are, you can extend that then to your residents and your clients, and thereby me, because you're caring for our parents. So thank you for the work that you're doing.
You're welcome.
Beyond the pandemic, we did mention at the beginning of the program that we as a community also are dealing with the aftermath of George Floyd's death. And I'd like to touch on that with you as well. How is this further impacting your understanding of the work ahead of us?
Yeah, thanks for raising this in this podcast. And we think it's an important topic as well. We'll look back on this time and we will not even believe we lived through it. I mean, we started with a pandemic, and in the healthcare space for us, in our own little world, we've got our stories to tell. Well, everyone's got their stories to tell. Some people's, professions evaporated overnight and not soon to recover. And then May 25th happened and the murder of George Floyd. And we have been quiet soldiers to the equity work that the St. Paul Chamber has been about for the last couple of years. We've attended the summits. We went from education the first year to take some action the second year, and we did. And our action last fall was to start a group of people, three white, two black, just to cut right to it, and we started reading a book on race. It was called Courageous Conversations on Race. And we had a plan, and it was going to be a beautiful plan, and it was going to be all on a step process, and we got to March and COVID hit, and we couldn't keep the book club going. And then May 25th hit, and we knew we had to do something more. 80% of our staff at Delwood are U.S. born black. And so, and that's 40, 35 people. The engine of what makes all this work every day in our building. And we knew we needed to get busy. And we in our own way, took our step to communicate our support. We're learning every day. It's 1 month today. It was May 25th.
Mm-hmm.
He was murdered. And so we got busy on how to start engaging some dialogue with staff, and actually just had our first kind of house-wide conversation yesterday. And I, along with our activities director, Lacey Dreams, who is black as well, we co-guided the conversation. We really wanted it not to be a leading conversation. So we heard a lot yesterday, and we're still reacting to it. I am so proud of our team. We had about 30 to 35 of our 45 or so staff, which was pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. 2:00 on a Thursday. So we didn't come away with a big action plan, but we certainly came away with people being heard, people knowing that their employer cares, that Black Lives Matter, and we want to figure out how to support that work. And we intend mm-hmm. that, and we're going to do that. And stay tuned. We'll keep you posted on where that goes.
I very much appreciate you sharing that. And I mean, that is the work before us. And I would say, if there's any input I'm getting from my community, my circle, friends, members of the chamber who are participating in our equity work, is that now is the time for the white allied community to speak into this.
Yep.
It isn't about appropriating their story. It's simply about using the agency where you've got it, how you've got it, and amplifying that work into the long term on behalf of real change.
Yep.
How exciting for you that you're dealing with it on a or such an organic basis, right? People getting together and talking about it and getting to know one another and developing their own understanding of. I think that's great.
Yeah. No,
well, thank you for that.
Yeah, no, and we agree with that. And B, I'm going to give you my own personal story that ties to that point. 10 years ago, I'm gay and I have a husband, and we've been together 22 years and officially married, I think five or six. Don't tell Mark, I can't remember. but anyway, well, after 22 years, right? But anyway, I was doing a lot of advocacy work around LGBT rights for marriage equality 10 years ago, and I served on a national board and all of that. And the traction came when the straight ally showed up. And so it's really that same model all over again, right? We were never going to get marriage equality without our straight allies. The black community is never going to get the justice they deserve for race until the white allies show up. And they're starting to. And let's hope to God it stays the course as it feels like it is now. I'm praying for it. I'm going to be in this. I mean, I saw the fight and the outcome of the fight. For LGBT marriage equality. So I'm here. I've got to be here. And there are many white staff at Delwood, by the way, that feel the same way.
That's beautiful. And I really appreciate that perspective when you put it within the context of the LGBTQ community. It's like, yeah, that's right. That does make sense. We're trying to work on that too. And I do have one final question for you, because I'm still fairly new in the chamber world itself. I'm here now for 3 years. My question is, how valuable is the chamber to your work? As you go about your business and you're really investing in the community, how do you see the work of a chamber of commerce in advancing your priorities?
Yeah, so Delwood's been open for 6 years. I reside in Minneapolis, but I got a huge heart for St. Paul. And one of the things, once we came up for air, Rich Packin and my business partner and I came up for air, after a couple of years, it was like time to get serious about the chamber. And it came at the heels of a higher performing team here at Delwood that allowed for us to do that. And I mean, the benefits are like immeasurable. Our marketing director, Lindsay Schmidt, is participating in the leadership program. The events, let's talk pre-COVID. I mean, the interaction and the ability to network with other people in the community. I mean, we need to be known in this community. And there's nothing like a chamber member knowing us and knowing us at a positive reputation level. We did, by the way, win the Dubner Award. So how can I not point that out for emerging business of the year in 2018? Right. Thank you. So we're fans. We're glad to be a part of the chamber. We think it's really helped us a lot in our business. And we'll figure out how to do it more virtually. We're doing it today.
Absolutely.
But, so much value. And here's another example, B, is that in this equity work, so I've got a friend, he works for Spire, and he Facebook posted on the weekend that he's going to be a part of their equity group at Spire. So I know him personally, he's a friend. And he posted that. I'm like, okay, now I know a network. I'm starting a network around this equity work with other St. Paul organizations that are getting serious about DEI work, diversity, equity, and
inclusion. Very cool.
So, I mean, that wouldn't have happened if we weren't a part of the chamber.
Yeah, it is really about that one, you know, the power of one, right? One relationship leads to another, and in so doing, you can change the world. Very cool.
Right.
Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I really wanted to thank you both again for chatting with me and letting me get to know you a little bit more. I appreciate your time and all that you're doing to serve our most vulnerable community. So if I may, truly, from my heart to yours, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
So thank everyone for joining us for Bee's Table Talk. We have more conversations in the weeks ahead, speaking to business leaders in the greater MSP region, hearing from them on how their companies are adapting to deal with COVID-19 and how they are paying it forward in the community. Thanks to all, and we will see you in the trenches.